are live, I guess.
Jimmy D and the Wolf.
Podcast. Some technical difficulties. False start.
Oh, man. That was an adventure.
Yeah. So.
I had a pretty interesting segue into the evening. We came home from my mother's house, had dinner over there with the family. And we got a new puppy a few days ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the puppy, we kind of saved him because the mother had had another litter and the puppy wandered over too close to the new litter. And the mom or the grandma, something like that, bit the puppy. And it's been gauzed up and had the cone of shame on and the whole bit. So we've been nursing this puppy back to health. And we had just walked back in to my mom's with the family, or from my mom's, rather. And we walked in, and the technician was here to work on our alarm on Friday, and it's been acting funky ever since. So we walk in, and I go to turn the alarm off, and my code didn't work. So the alarm starts going off, and it's so loud. Dude, it's mind-numbing how loud that thing is. And I've been standing in front of guitar amplifiers for most of my life. And it was so loud, it was almost like the puppy freaked out and scratched his little spot. So it was going, woo, like unbelievably loud. And then the puppy starts bleeding all over the place. It was pandemonium. And I get the alarm people on the phone, and they're like, I can barely hear this lady. My family's standing outside, and it's like 30 degrees, right? They're standing outside to get away from this, the most obnoxious sound you've ever heard in your life. And I finally get the alarm people on the phone, and the lady's like, you need to get a screwdriver, a Phillips head screwdriver. And I'm like, look, I'm not a technician. You know, I'm not doing that. I need you to make this sound stop, like now. And she's like, well, we're going to have to send you an email. And for you to cancel your service, you'll have to write a letter to us with the service number and all this stuff. I'm not going to put them on blast which company it was, because the one lady was pretty nice. And I ended up having to talk like five people. It was 45 minutes. And mind you, the whole time, this alarm is blasting me in my soul, man. It's like so loud. And she said, can you unplug the battery? And I'm like, sure. So I pop the battery out. And it's still going off. Well, the tech was here Friday, and evidently he like hardwired this thing. It was plugged in through the wall. And she said, can you unplug the battery? And I unplugged the battery, and I said, I unplugged it. And she can still hear the alarm going off. And she's like, well, the battery is a rectangular white thing. I'm like, no, lady, I know what a battery looks like. I have the battery in my hand. And it's the puppy still bleeding and like all hell's breaking loose on the home front, you know? And she's like, well, I'm going to get you to somebody that can stop the alarm now. So she sends me to another person. And the whole time I'm like, I need to cancel my service with you guys like immediately, like in the next 5 seconds. I need to just pump brakes and be done doing business with your company. And so I get on the phone with the lady that supposedly could make the alarm stop. And she was very understanding. I'm like, my family's standing outside in the cold. Our puppy is bleeding because your alarm system just basically gave him an anxiety attack. I need you to get this to stop now. And they told me that I need to fill out a letter to cancel service. And she's like, okay, well, normally we won't do this, but I'm going to see if I can get this to turn off like right now. And I'm on hold for like 15 minutes, dude, and just getting blasted by this alarm the whole time and trying to keep my cool. And so finally she comes back on and the alarm stops, right? So I spend probably another 30 minutes on the phone to figure out how to cancel the service. And I actually do have to write these people a letter. And near the end of the phone call, the alarm comes on again. And at this point, I'm like an hour, maybe hour and a half in on getting blasted by this thing right upside my head. So I had to do it the old-fashioned way, and I pulled it out of the wall. It had to happen, dude. It was the only way to make it stop.
I would have pulled out of the wall after about 5 minutes.
I know, I know. I was trying to avoid that whole scenario.
I have no patience. I have my father's patience.
Right?
Is none.
It was terrible, man. And then they called me back, and they're like, well, we see that all your equipment's paid for, and you've been a customer with us for a long time. And the lady literally said this. You've been paying too much for your service, and we would like to offer you a better service for less money. Excuse me. And I was like, I'd rather take a beating at this point than to, you know, deal with your company. I got to write this letter just to get the service stopped. And it literally was like the worst 2 hours of my entire life.
When was that? Yesterday? Today?
Today. It all started at like about 10 minutes till 5 today. It went on for at least an hour and a half, dude. By the time it was done, I was like drained because I had used every amount of humanity that I had, you know, because they kept giving me to a new person. And it's kind of like when you go to the hospital and you fill out the form with your social and your insurance information and your name, and then you go into another room. They're like, we need to fill out this form with the insurance information and your social and your name. Each new person that answered the phone while this alarm is like stealing life force from me, dude, it's just murdering me the whole time. And each time a new person, there's four or five people by the time it was over. Each time a new person gets on the phone, could I verify your name, your address, your telephone number? What's your verbal password? What's your passcode to the alarm system? It was like what I would imagine hell would be, man. You know, it was a rough couple hours and I was feeling great. I walked in the door. We had a great meal at my mom's. I walk in the door feeling great. And then that alarm system, I was so over it by the time it was done, dude, that I sit down on the recliner and it was just like my brain was fried. I was emotionally tired from trying to be polite to these people. I wanted to jump through the phone and murder all of them. And I was just trying to be as nice as I could.
Wow, you're a much better man than I am. An hour and a half?
Yeah, it was every bit of an hour and a half. And I probably spent half of that time on hold.
And where was the... So who all was there? Your
men? All kids and Kate. And our four pets. So it was Memphis, Marshall, Madeline, Kate, and I.
Oh, Marshall was there too. Wow.
Yeah. And they're all standing out in the front yard to try to get away from literally the loudest sound I've ever heard in my life, dude. This thing was like... I've been getting blasted in the back of the head by amplifiers since I was 11 years old, and I've never heard anything louder than this alarm. It was terrible.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's something. That's you know, customer service is something that I think really has been degraded. I mean,
it doesn't exist anymore, man. And that's,
no, it doesn't. And every company, well, you know, companies have different values. We've talked about this in some previous podcasts. And I was on my nephew, I was talking to him about this, and he quick did a podcast for his Unscripted Banter is his podcast. We need to cross fertilizer and have him on ours and be on his. But, you know, starting in the early 70s, there were a couple of things that happened that allowed corporations in general to, there was a prominent, I think, was it Friedman? Or there's a prominent economist who came out and said that companies should no longer value their employees as their number one resource. They should, their number one stakeholder is their shareholders. And also at the same time, the SEC made it possible so that publicly traded companies could buy back stock. And in 2018, I think it was the last year they measured it, there was $1 trillion spent on stock buybacks on publicly traded companies in the U.S. and total payroll is like 200 billion. I mean, it's a fraction of that, like 200 billion. So people are focused on elevating the stock, and it's a mindset thing. Customers don't matter. And I, in my opinion, and also, you know, with that idea that it's not about service, it's all about making the minimum amount of money cost wise and maximizing that profit and not caring about personal relationships. And I personally feel that that has contributed to the lack of customer service like you experienced today. You know, you can't get anybody on the phone. And if you do get somebody on the phone, they're probably in a foreign country where the cost of labor per hour is much cheaper. And they're polite, but they speak with a very distinct accent. And, you know, they can do a fine job, but it's, you're already thinking that, well, you're getting farmed out, right? I mean, so it's not customer service. So I don't know, the company you work with probably is not that big of a company. So the people you were talking to probably were in the U.S., you think, or where were they?
Wherever Vic is, the alarm company, they're garbage, man. I know I said I wasn't going to say their name, but they're a garbage company.
What was the name? You cut out for a second.
Vivint.
Okay.
Yeah, Vivint Security, dude. Never again. They'll never get another cent from me.
I never heard of them. Yeah, that was an Indiana company.
Yeah, I've had them for like 5 years, you know, and we've had problems on and off. Hmm. And when I tried to cancel it before, we were wrapped up in the contract and all that good old stuff. But hellish experience with the lack of customer service.
Well, I'm sorry I had to go through that, buddy.
Oh, it's all good, man. It's interesting how it all has changed as quickly as it has.
Ty Bowling says, but customers won't typically pay more for a product that has good customer service. Well, that's possibly true. Yeah, I mean, that's the other side of the coin. Will customers pay more to have better customer service? Yeah, it's a balancing act, I guess.
We have some local businesses that do pretty well with it.
Well, I will say that, you know, my experience with Apple, I'm an Apple, I have an Apple iPhone, I have an iPad, the computer that we're doing this on is Apple. I found the customer support from Apple to be exceptional myself.
So sweet.
So Ty Bowling says that he would pay more. So yeah, I think it's a, you know, having to wrestle with customer service. And I'm talking about customer service. I mean, back in, you know, unrelated, but DMV, you know, when you have to go, it used to be go do battle. Okay, my annual registration. I got to renew my registration. And I remember New York City, upstate New York, when I was in the state of New York, I remember it was horrible. That was some years ago. I remember waiting in line for like an hour, and I get to the front of the line, and the woman closes the window and says, I'm going to lunch. There were like four lines, and I waited in that line, you know. And I remember when I moved to Boston, I had some guns, and you had to register your guns in Boston. And I put down, you know, where I came from, and SD for South Dakota, or it was SDAC. And she wanted me to give my passport because she thought it was a foreign country.
From that.
So, you know, I've had horror stories, but I want to say since I moved to Tennessee, I found, and you have to, in Davidson County, you have to get your emissions checked. Cheatham, you don't have to. There's a county called Cheatham. I found that hilarious. That's where I lived when I first moved here. You don't have to do the emissions test. But I was, you know, concerned about having to do that, and it is so effortless. You do have to wait in line, but it doesn't take that long. They've got four bays open, and when you get in there, they say, "Would you like to renew your registration as well as get your emission test?" Yes, sir, I would like to do that, so I don't have to go anywhere else. And they do it right there, and you're in and out. Driving there, it was probably about 15 minutes away, so round trip about 30 minutes. And waiting, so the total round trip for me to go there, get it done, and get back was an hour. And that's exceptional. I mean, that's customer service. That, and you know, it is possible, I think, to give good customer service. So
we bought a job, man.
You know, Apple does it. I think they've got exceptional service. I just think that the cost, in my personal opinion, the cost cutters get involved in saying, you know, this isn't, we're not making any money from customer service, so we're going to, you know, we're going to cut it and make it as cheap as possible and as difficult as possible. Depends on the company, you know. So, you know, like another thing is credit reports. I had my credit report frozen and of all three credit agencies, and each one's a little different. One of them, I can just log in and there's a switch. You can literally get an electron on the screen. You know, you flip it on, turn it off. And if you want your credit unfrozen, so somebody could check it, if you wanted to make a purchase of a car or something, you can log in. And I can't remember which one it is. It's really easy. Just log in and do it. The other two is a pain. It takes at least a half an hour for each one because you got to call them and they're constantly trying to sell you. They're trying to sell you, you know, because they're not making any money from that. They want you to buy some subscription thing so that they watch your credit for you. And I don't want that. I just want to unfreeze my credit for a week so that somebody can get my credit report. And I always ask, okay, which one do you use? So I don't have to go through hell for all three or for the, well, if it's the one, it's easy. I just log in and I can't remember which is which. I probably should know. I'll give props to the one that is so easy. Is it Equifax is the easy one, I think?
Equifax, Experian. There's one more.
Equifax, Experian.
The other one starts with an F, right?
I don't know. Let's see if I got it here, written in my book. Experian. Experian might be the one that I can log in. No, Equifax. Equifax is the one that I can log in. Experian, there's a PIN number, but you have to call in. There's a phone number here. So Equifax is a good guy. I like Equifax. It's easy to log in and unfreeze your credit and freeze it again. They're not trying to, I mean, they would like to sell you thing. They all make money by the you know, the thing that monitors your credit, and that's how they make their money. But they at least have decent service so you can just go in and do what you need to do. But Experian and the other one, I don't remember the other one. Both of them are pain in the butt.
And, you know, a credit score is such a sham of a system anyway, man. It's such I remember getting so mad when I was younger, probably by like 23 years old. I had worked more hours and put in more time than anybody my age and had saved more money than anybody my age that I knew personally in my circle. And as I knew, had friends that were, you know, financing brand new cars and four-wheelers and all this other stuff. Banks didn't want to talk to me because I was self-employed. And it was just such a joke, man. It's however they're measuring that is wrong. However the banks.
Well, it's like you're trying to, try to think of an analogy. You're trying to decide whether you want to buy a $500,000 house by how beautiful the keys look. You haven't even seen the house. Right. I'm trying to come up with a good analogy, but they're using indicators of payments on credit card and what percent you're using on your credit card and if you're late on those payments, and have absolutely nothing to do with your debt to asset ratio. And I use credit cards, but I pay them all off every month. And my rate goes up and down because, you know, like my Amex card, I think I got 10 grand credit on it. And if I use that all up, but I always pay it off before no interest is collected. But if when they take their data and it shows that I've got 8,000 of that 10,000 credit used, oh, that's a hit because you're using a high percentage of your credit. But they don't even know that I pay it off every month. Right. They don't even ask that question or find that question.
Being fiscally responsible is hurting your credit.
What's that?
Being fiscally responsible is hurting your credit.
Yeah.
That's how
they're taking indicators that are really are just surface indicators, really. I mean, yes, I guess if you're late on your payment, that is an indicator that you might be a little bit of a deadbeat, but I missed the payment because I completely forgot about it. It was one credit card. Actually, it was PayPal credit. I'd completely forgotten that I'd had it. And I get emails from PayPal all the time trying to sell me stuff. So I didn't open up the emails that said that I had, this was past due. And my credit dropped, you know, I think it's now almost 800, but it, I think it dropped below 700 because I missed that one payment. You know, I made it all up, paid all the penalties and everything, but they dinged me pretty hard for that. You know, I think 143 on time. And it dinged my credit rating like 100 points almost. It's back up to where it was, but.
And what they're just bad metrics that they're using.
It is. It's a bad measure. It's
well, it's interesting. I was thinking about it.
Okay, here's an analogy. I'm pulling out a guitar-related one. It's like trying to buy an electric guitar and deciding how good it sounds by the color of the knobs.
Right. Yeah. Or what it looks like, which most people do that very thing.
True. True.
How pretty is it? Oh, it's beautiful. It's going to sound great. When they have absolutely nothing to do with each other.
Right, right. Anyway, you were going on a subject. What were you going to go towards?
Well, you know, I was just thinking about how we had talked about Italy and kind of this phenomenon that's happening not just in Italy, but I believe Japan, Korea, and now all of a sudden because of a lot of the policy implemented about immigration, now it's happening in the United States.
Yeah.
The demographics of really not enough people being born to hold up the economies and the workforce.
Well, it's a problem, and I think we've talked about it before, but it's a problem in every developed country is facing this to some extent. And the worst ones, it's the birth rate per adult woman is, you need 2.1 to maintain your population. And South Korea and Italy are some of the worst. They're down to about 1.1. So their population is decreasing and getting older because you don't have any young people. If you ever seen the movie, I don't remember what it's called, but it had Clive Davis in it. It's the first 17 minutes was one take it was just one continuous take of a car chase with a lot of action. It was an amazing movie. But basically the premise of the movie is that fertility had gone in the toilet and the youngest person, nobody were having babies because they couldn't. Because now fertility rate is down and a lot of couples have difficulty getting pregnant. And is it the chemicals in the food? Well, you know, what is it? But there's something about our world that makes fertility, you know, it's hard to get pregnant. How many times do you say trying to get pregnant? And so if you extrapolate that, where fertility has completely fallen off the cliff and nobody can have babies, so they, in this dystopian movie, the youngest person in the world was 17 years old. Nobody had a baby in 17 years, and it became very dystopian. People had no hope. I mean, just imagine you knew that we were going to die out as a civilization. And so that's an extreme example, but imagine how rapidly the average age is going to become if you can't have any babies or you're having fewer babies. And Japan has got a real problem because they have a low birth rate, but they also have the longest life expectancy of any country in the world. I mean, if you're Japanese, you man or woman, women have longer, but both of them are in the 80s average. I think maybe 88 for Japanese women. And men are in the U.S., we're in the 70s, mid-70s. So our life expectancy is like 10 years less on average than Japanese. So you combine that low birth rate and high life expectancy, you got a problem. I mean, you got a lot of old people and not enough young people producing to pay for it, you know, to produce, to keep the company going and the economy going. So Italy's got a problem their demographics is the fewer and fewer people having babies. And so you may, some people watching this or heard, listening to this may have heard that they are, there's some of the people that are there, the young people are all going to the big cities, which is a common thing in the U.S. also. Rural areas getting hollowed out because young people want to go where the excitement is. And so these rural areas in Italy are, these cities are dying. And there was a big thing about a year ago or 2 years ago where it was in the New York Times that they were going to auction off properties in one of these little towns in Italy for a dollar. Well, the fine print was that's the starting price. And some of these places were just a hole in the ground where there was a foundation. There really wasn't even a property. So, but there was, now it's in the news again. A bunch of small towns have started to do that. But there's one town that's doing a little different. It's not an auction, but they said, here's my email. The mayor says, here's my email. Email me if you're interested and I'll try to match you up with a property. But we want people, new lifeguard coming into our town. And, you know, it's intriguing. I love Italy. It's my favorite country in the world to visit. And it would be really cool to have a, you know, have a, my Italian vacation home, you know. How often would you go there, you know, to fly across the Atlantic to get there? And the small town, you probably, even once you landed, if you landed in Rome or wherever you would land, you probably, how long would you have to be on the road? I mean, bus, car, how would you get there? I don't know. Train? All of these things would need to be figured out. But it's a romantic thing with attraction. And most of these are south of, probably the south of Italy, because in northern Italy from Rome north is more of the industrialized. So most of these towns are south of Rome, would be called southern Italy. And yeah, I'd love to have a property. It'd be fun. It'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
Heck yeah, it would.
You know.
Especially if you can get them on the cheap.
You know, I'll send you. Did I send you the link for the one?
It's, no.
See if I can find it here.
No, I'd love to see it.
Oh, no. Okay, let me check. The, Italian house for $1. Well, there's a whole bunch. Yeah, here's one. Cinque Frondi, the COVID-free Italian town selling dollar houses. This is from the 10th of June. And here's one. Here's one. We bought a dollar house in Italy. Here's what happened next. And there's a, you know, are you, were you a fan of The Sopranos? Did you watch The Sopranos?
I did not.
Okay. Well, Lorraine Bracco was the actress who, well, she was in Goodfellas also. She was the wife of the Ray Liotta character. And talk about a long opening cut to a movie. The opening cut to Goodfellas was also like a 15-minute uncut take, one camera, one take with uncut in the beginning of the movie when he takes her, his wife, who was Lorraine Bracco, taking her back through the back of the kitchen in this Italian restaurant and then coming back to the inside of the restaurant. And I'm pretty sure that's the opening scene. It's one of the early scenes. I think it's the opening scene. Anyway, Lorraine Bracco, actress. She played the psychologist that Tony Soprano would go see, his shrink. And there was a little bit of sexual chemistry there between them. She was attracted to him and because he was so dangerous and everything. Well, that actress bought a house in Italy, and she's Italian. I don't know if she speaks Italian, but Bracco, that's an Italian name. And she bought a house, and there is a show on Netflix, or I'm not sure which channel. I haven't seen it because I think it's on a channel I don't get. But it's a show of her travails of trying to renovate her house. And from the previews, it looks like it didn't go all smoothly. Of course, if you're going to have good TV, you got to have drama, right? You got to have problems.
Sure.
But
how many contracting businesses are there in these little towns in Italy where they'll sell a house for a dollar?
Yeah. You know, and how many restaurants are there, and how what's the amenities? I mean, what is there a grocery store there? I mean, you know, in the little town where I went to high school in South Dakota, and where I had my business before I could move to Nashville, town of Willow Lake, I graduated high school there. It's a population of about 400 people, and there is one restaurant there, or there was. I haven't been there now in 5 years, so I don't know how it's changed. There's one restaurant, and that restaurant was put up by the city, and a bunch of people bought shares in it so that we had a nice restaurant. And it's a nice restaurant, but their menu is limited. You get tired of eating there every day. I would eat there every day after, during work for lunch, and there is there is a small grocery store that is also owned by the town. It would go under if it wasn't owned by the town and supported by the town. So there is some amenity, but every week you go to town to get your, you know, you get your milk and stuff like that there, but it's expensive and it's not very sustainable. So I'm extrapolating. I wonder if these little towns is like that, and it would be hard to live there. I mean, Willow Lake is 45 minutes from Watertown, which is where I lived before I came. I moved to Watertown. And making a trip, you go like once a week, and you do all your shopping while you're in Watertown. Watertown's a town of about 20,000. So I'm wondering, these little towns in Italy, are they similar to that? What are the amenities? What are the medical amenities? What if some, you have, God forbid, you have a medical emergency? How far away is a hospital, a doctor?
Yeah.
Sort of thing. So these are all things that, you know, if you're going to go there, I would think that I'm not going to go there for a weekend because it's flying across the Atlantic.
Right.
When I go visit my property in Italy, I'm probably going to go there, bring my guitar, maybe bring my computer and my DAW, and, you know, spend a month there, you know, have a writing thing. You know, you and I go there and imagine the songs we'd write if we were isolated in Italy.
Learn flamenco.
What's that?
Learn flamenco guitar.
Well, yeah, yeah. You know, so it would be fun, but, you know, it sounds romantic, but how real is it? Just wonder.
Sure. Well, it would probably be easier on almost anybody other than Americans. You know? It would probably be harder on us as Americans than it would literally anybody else going there. Because we all have a Walmart. But it would be a blast to do it. And it's a fascinating thing that they're selling them that cheap. I mean, buying houses like that, if you knew how to do the work, you know, that would be the sauce for a young guy that knows how to do some carpenter work. Go get one of those places and fix it up.
Well, here, let's see what this article says. We bought a dollar house in Italy. Here's what happened next. It looked like a deal too good to be true. A new house, potentially a whole new life for sale in sun-kissed rural Italy. The deal's made headlines on CNN, and I read about it in the New York Times. Many of the towns were filled with inquiries, but did anyone actually buy? Did they run? So caught up with some pioneering buyers. This one was intended as a family home. They say they love the terrace. Let's see. Yeah, well, they're pretty happy with it, I guess. Doesn't say. At the end, they were opted for a 10,000 euro and invested some money in the renovation. So they didn't buy one euro one, but they paid 10,000 euro, which is probably about $12,000. Some of them were sold for 25,000. Yeah, so it seems like they're. People in Sambuca, I'm only 40, but I've started to think about my future when I retire from work. So, yeah, these people, there's some positive reviews of it.
I'll go half on one of the $1 ones with you. If you want to do it. Split. We could Airbnb it, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure you can. I mean, today, while you're logging on the internet and being able to, I don't know if Google has gone through and driven through all the streets. I wonder if you could, you know, like you can you can go to Google, what's it called? Google Maps.
Yeah.
And you can get a street view of any address in the U.S. And I wonder, just wonder if you could do the same in Italy. So you could kind of scope it out. You can do a lot before you even go over there, you know, and so.
It's, you've piqued my interest.
Yeah, it sounds really romantic. I love Italy. I just, I could be talked into getting involved with that pretty easily.
Right, right.
You know, so.
Photograph thing, man. I mean, that's happening all over the place, and it's happening here more now because of the immigration thing, right? Because that's what was kind of counteracting those numbers for us for a long time.
Right. Yeah. And there's a saying called demographics is destiny, because, you know, you can only be so productive. And so population growing, it's your economy is probably going to be growing if your population is growing. If your population is shrinking, it's going to be hard to have an economy growing. So, and if your population is aging versus if you're having, I mean, think of all the purchases that come with getting married and having kids.
Yeah.
You know, you got to pay for a wedding. You got to pay for a honeymoon. You have, and then you have kids, you've got doctor appointments, and you've got, you got a crib, and you got a, well, you got, you know, three kids. So, you know, there's some costs, there's some expense there. There's some stimulation to the economy, right?
Sure.
And then saving for their college or whatever you're saving for. And all of that, it just in general, and it, I mean, seeing that movie, which I can't remember the name of it, but it had Clive Davis in it, the one where the youngest person was 17. It just gave a picture of people who were just giving up on life because, you know, babies, having kids running around, there's just something about that. Even if they're not yours, even if they're strangers, there's something about a society that has young people coming up, and even if you just read about them, you know, but if you know that nobody's having kids and you're, I mean, I think it would put a society into a negative frame of mind.
Absolutely.
And so, I mean, it's cycle of life. I mean, you get older and you want to give a hand up to somebody that, like, somebody gave you a hand up sort of thing. You want to mentor someone. And if there's no one there to mentor, you know, it kind of, you have less meaning. So, yeah, I think it's important to keep the fertility rate up. Although there are people on the other side that say that, you know, we have too many people living on this earth. We should cut down on the population. There are those who believe like that. But here's the thing that's happening. Do you know what countries are having kids like they're going out of style? Is the Muslim countries. Indonesia is having like 10 kids per adult. I don't know what the number is, but it's crazy. Their population is exploding, and that's a Muslim country. And they're having a lot of kids because I guess they don't have much other entertainment. So
they don't have a Walmart.
So... And it's usually lesser developed countries that have a high fertility rate. Developed countries in general, you know, have a lower fertility rate, you know, because you have other interests to fulfill you. And maybe you have one kid. How many one kid families do you know? I mean, you're the exception, Jimmy, amongst your age peers, I would think, with three kids.
Well, it's funny, man, because coming up from a big family when I was little, it was more commonplace. And now all of a sudden I have three. And I run into people all the time, like, oh, three kids. You know, it's just funny because when I was little, that was nothing. Nothing at all. That was like commonplace. But now most people do. They have one. It's one and done if they have any at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not unusual to have one kid. I mean, I can think of people in our church, you know, one kid, you know. Whereas when I was growing up, Jeff, how many kids were in your family, if you're still listening? I know there were a bunch, there were five or six. How many kids did your father have? I think, I'm going to guess five or six. Jeff, I'm asking you, how many did your family have? Did your father have? I think you had more than five or six. How about you, Jimmy? There were seven, eight in your family? Seven. Jeff said seven. So, yeah. And you, how many, Jimmy, did you have?
List of seven, and then my father had one that was older, but seven from the same mom.
Okay, five boys and two is Ireland's. Yeah, because your dad had more than one wife, I guess. So anyway, yeah, I mean, it's rare to have today in 2020 for a family that even has three kids. You know,
well, it'd be hard to make it with seven kids now. You'd be hard pressed to get by, you know.
Oh, I got you. Financially, yeah, yeah. Yeah, standard of living is different. Wow, four wives for your dad? Okay. And I can't find one. So, you know, what do you do?
He was a real glutton for punishment, huh?
Yeah. Hey, Jeff, what do you think of buying a property in Italy for $1? Does that interest you at all?
I need to meet Jeff. He's a Hoosier. We both come from seven kids. Jeff and I need to meet. We're going to have to take a trip out there so I can meet this guy.
Oh, yeah. We did have a gig arranged in November, but then it got canceled. So yeah. Hopefully we're still going to be Jeff said he would be interested. I think the odds for he'd be interested in the Italian thing. I'd come there. Yeah, you could come and visit. You could hang out for a month if you'd wanted to.
Well, it turns out, as luck would have it, we're going to have an Airbnb. It's only like what could we afford to do? Like a dollar a month Airbnb if we buy it for a dollar?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure people have thought about that. But then again, if it's off the beaten track and it's not near any tourist attractions, you know, I mean, these are not that close to like the Vatican and Rome and the Colosseum and, you know, and then you go to Florence. These are far away from those tourist attractions. And Venice, you know, I don't think you could buy a property in Venice for a dollar. It's not going to happen. Or Florence or Rome. But the way of life in Italy, it's a different culture. You know, it's European and Italian. I mean, and even within, I remember when I first was going to Europe on business, and I would refer to, and I was wanting to learn. I was hungry. I wanted to be like a sponge and learn everything about the cultures. And my mentor or my counterpart, Jean-Claude Cardinal, is a Frenchman. He worked for DuPont in Europe, and he was my cohort that would take me around to visit these companies. And we became good friends. I always wonder what happened to him. I would talk about, well, Europeans are different than Americans. And he would say, Europeans, you can't compare. We're not all the same. You get from an English person to an Italian, they're so far away. We're not all one culture. You can't just say Europeans. He would kind of get at me for saying that. He said, no, we're all different. We all have unique cultures. So, you know, there's a joke that the Japanese would tell. You know, there's a ship sinking. It's kind of a dumb joke, but it makes a point. There was a ship sinking. 33 cents. Jeff will put in 33 cents for his share. You can do it. Sold. There's a ship sinking, and there's only enough room for women and children. So the captain of the ship, and it's a multinational clientele. And so the captain of the ship has to figure out a way to get the men to jump overboard, basically commit suicide. So it was by nationality. And for the Brits, it was, hey, it's a sport. Let's all jump in the ocean. It's all a sport. Let's pick a sport out of it. The Germans, it was, you will jump in the water. You know, order, because Germans follow orders, according to this joke. The Italians, it's illegal for you to jump in the water. The Japanese, it says, let's all do it together. It's a group thing. Let's do it together. And the Americans, don't worry. You can jump in the water. You're insured. So that was the Japanese joke way of looking at some of the different cultures. you know, it's a dumb joke, but it
right down the pipe, man.
Cultures are different. And Irish, I don't know what the Irish would be, you know,
water drunk.
So we, you know, cultures are different, and each it's really cool. Thanks, Jeff. It's kind of a dad joke, I guess, but culture is what's so interesting. That's why I love to go to Europe and other countries and experience their cultures, and that's where it's just so much fun learning from other people. So we've been going for 45 minutes. You got any other words of wisdom there, sir?
Well, we're only 66 cents away from buying one of these places.
Yeah.
Watching. Jeff, I look forward to meeting you, man.
Yeah. We're about to get you guys in the same room. All right. Jimmy D and the Wolf. We'll see you next time.